Welcome to another, episode? Mike, shit. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Lily. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game the Podcast.
See, you fucked it up too, Mike.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to show you up and make you feel bad.
Thank you, and I've cursed twice, so that means people are already drunk.
And happy.
Hey, Mikey, let's introduce our guest.
Yes, I mean, this is a special, very special edition of Fair Game Podcast, because we have someone, actually, who I've never spoken to.
Is that true?
Okay. No, I have not spoken to him.
Really interesting, Mike.
And he is, we talk about OGs on this program,
yes.
And this is one of the original gangster Scientology whistleblower people in the world. Welcome, Andreas Helder Lund, founder of Operation Clambake. We are so happy to have you to talk to you about things today, all the way from Norway.
Thank you, Mike. That was a hell of an introduction. Not worthy, but thank you very much.
And for all of you who can't see him, he is wearing a holiday sweater that I appreciate very much. Very much. Thank you for wearing that, Andreas. Makes me very happy.
Good.
A man of many words.
If I can make Leah happy, I'm happy.
There you go.
Very rare occasion, I might say, Andreas. So let's talk about who Andreas is, what Operation Clambake is. And Mike, before I forget, because I have recently become the person who walks around with my phone to my ear as I'm talking to people saying I'm looking for my phone. So before I forget, I will want to ask you this later. If I don't, you'll let me know. I wonder, because you're saying you never actually spoke to Andreas, which I find very interesting. But did you know of Andreas when you were in Scientology, and did you not?
Of course.
And further, for later, because we want our guests to speak, did you fair game him?
Of course.
Like, oh my God.
Of course.
Andreas, I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at Mike's assholeness when he was in the Sea Org and fair gaming you, but I loved Mike's smile and his ability to confront the things of his past.
Well, I can admit I didn't fair game Mike, but we did talk a lot about him.
Now's your chance, well, buddy. Now's your chance.
I must say, Andreas, it really is a pleasure to finally have a conversation with you, even though we're doing it, you know, in a sort of unusual circumstance, but like, as everybody who listens to this knows, we see each other on Zoom so that we, you know, can relate better, even though you only hear this audio wise, but it's really nice to see you and finally have a chance to chat with you. I've spoken to a lot of people from my past, you know, life. And it's always interesting to hear what your perspective was and to sort of exchange views. You know, like I've developed a great friendship with like John Atack and some other people who once were, you know, we were mortal enemies and now we're pretty good friends. So hopefully we can establish a friendship now too.
Absolutely, and it's I must say it's an humbling honor to be here. It's been a very weird ride for you guys too, but also for me. So it's weird sitting here.
I understand. Let's talk about Andreas. Let's talk about you were a Scientologist, correct?
Nope, I've never been a Scientologist.
Interesting. Didn't know that. So you were not a Scientologist. What brought you to create Operation Clambake? Let's talk about what it is, first of all.
Operation Clambake is a web page that a site that grew out like a snowballed a little bit for me back when I started in 1996. Mm-hmm. It was meant as a weekend stunt. I was a IT buff, early implementer of internet, worked with IT, had my room full of PCs, and was a big advocate of free speech.
Right.
So I was involved in some crypto thing and encryption software and stuff like that. I was very fascinated about the democratic power of internet, and like we thought we saw this, what internet could become,
right,
if it was let loose.
Right.
So back then I was really eager. I could make web pages. So I have to remember this was before Wikipedia, before Google, before right. Facebook and social media. We had news groups and Alta Vista and search engines like that. But it was
right.
You really had to know your way around. My sister couldn't find anything on the internet. I knew how to find it.
Right.
The big difference.
Right.
I was usually finding stuff for her. There was a newspaper article in one of the largest newspapers in Norway. There was this man who had won a court case against this American church, and he was awarded equivalent to $100,000,
uh-huh.
which is weird because in Norway we don't have this punitive damage that you have in America. I mean, you can't sue me, you can't hurt me by suing me, frivolous lawsuits and stuff like that. It's impossible here. So I was puzzled by a man being able to sue a church and win and get $100,000.
A cult.
Yeah, to me then it was just a church. So Scientology, mm-hmm. Church of Scientology. I didn't know anything. I've seen them in the streets when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
I knew they have a boom back in the 80s when we had this financial boom all over the West. But I didn't know more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started going into the internet, finding stuff. And I was stumbling over these people who were really struggling. Some really the ruined lives and a lot of really weird information. I didn't believe any of it, but I saw that the Church of Scientology was succeeding in winning the fight to remove it. I found something on a Friday, mm-hmm. and 2 days later, the site was down, and I tried to contact this person. And
so what you're saying is, Andreas, that people were posting the truth about Scientology, like their beliefs and what they were doing to people. And let me just remind everyone how much Scientology costs. This is not a faith-based religion, and you were seeing information being put up by people who were actually in Scientology, putting up the truth of what Scientology likes to keep confidential, like what, Mike, the OT levels and stuff. Is that
OT
what
levels later than not?
Yes,
and okay. all that good stuff.
And just so you know, again, just to remind people, these are confidential levels. Scientology will not admit to that. This is their true beliefs. Another big difference between a cult and Scientology is that most true religions will let you know exactly what they believe. They won't hold scripture confidential until you pay for it. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and then I started getting in contact with people like Grady Ward, Oney Larima, Dennis Eilish, Keith Henson. In America, Sinan Panousis in Sweden, Karen mm-hmm. Spink in Netherlands, people who are also like me, very involved in this and very interested in taking part of it.
Yeah,
and they were telling me, yeah, here's the document you asked for that disappeared from my site, but don't tell anybody who you got it from, and never publish it because they will come and take it. And I saw there were raids in America, there was raids in Netherlands, there were raids in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, no, nobody can tell me what to do and what not to do. I live in Norway, and I know the internet. So, hell, I packed a bag because I think it was Sinan Panousis in Sweden who was the last one before me who published the OT levels, etc. And he got raided and arrested. What Scientology wasn't aware of or didn't research. Well, he was a lawyer, so he took them, made it really bad for them in Sweden. That's another story. But so I packed a little bag. I was publishing the knots. I made a knot generator that read all the knots documents and OTs and then generated fake knots. I don't know if you're aware, but the knots were posted in the Library of Congress, but not as a full text. It was like slits on it so that you couldn't see the full text because it was secret.
You're talking about Knots, Scientology, another confidential level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they had the, like, mask the knots, filed it as copyrighted mm-hmm. documents.
Yeah.
And and we then generated fake notes because we were having fun imagining we were going to a Norwegian court. And I had printed out like a meter of fake notes and mixed in the real notes in there, so that when they arrested me and took all my stuff from my apartment, they will have to spend like 50 people just sitting there trying to find the real notes, the document in court.
Now, what am I not understanding here, Mike? Who's doing the arresting?
The authorities. What happened was that RTC under David Miscavige went to first court. I'm actually not sure, Andreas, you may know better whether Karen Spank or Zenon Panousis was targeted, or Dennis Ehrlich and Grady Ward in the U.S. were first. But in the United States, at least, what happened was RTC filed an intellectual property lawsuit against these people who they claimed were infringing on their intellectual properties, which was Dennis Ehrlich, Grady Ward, Keith Henson, and went into court and said, court, you need to issue an immediate injunction and seize these things. Like, intellectual property law has a lot of things where you can go seize stuff. If someone is making fake Louis Vuitton handbags, then you can get the marshals from the court to go seize it all so that they can't keep selling it. You can also, it was sort of a new thing, but get the marshals of the U.S. District Federal Court to go and seize computers that were claimed to have been engaged in violating the intellectual property rights of Religious Technology Center by publishing the OT materials on the internet. And that's what happened in the United States. It was federal marshals from the court that went to Dennis Ehrlich's house and took his computers away.
Who is Dennis Ehrlich?
Dennis Ehrlich is an ex-Scientologist who was formerly a senior technical person at the Flag Land Base, who had left, who was sort of embittered and decided that he was going to take a stand and post OT materials on the internet.
And has a church in the history of the world ever done such a thing? I mean, if Scientology is so...
No other church has copyrighted, trade secret protected, quote, scriptures. So there's never been anything like this before.
Jehovah's Witnesses have done something similar or tried, but they were smart enough to back out when they saw that the more they tried to fight against it, the more attention the critics got. So they just shut up.
Wow, this is insane.
Yeah. So there were these people that were doing it in the United States. And then, as Andreas mentioned, there were two very prominent ones, Karen Spank in the Netherlands and Zenon Panousis in Sweden, who were also doing the same thing. And I don't know what the procedures were that RTC used to get raids done over there. Probably something similar. You go into court or you go to some government agency and say, our intellectual property rights are being
violated.
And generally, when it comes to intellectual property, there is always a recourse so that you can stop it. Like, if someone steals the formula for Coca-Cola, the trade secret formula for Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola finds out that someone's got it and they're making fake Coke, then Coca-Cola Company can go get that stopped. And that's the principle.
Great example, Mike, because the Church of Scientology is run as a business and should be treated as such, because they use every aspect of a business to protect themselves, to make profit, and yet want none of this, right? They don't believe in freedom of information, freedom of speech. They don't believe in any of that when it comes to those who are exposing Scientology for what they truly are.
Right. Uh-huh. And And just one other point I'm going to interrupt, sort of throw in here, and then I'll let Andreas talk again, is that this presented a huge difficulty for Scientology in that part of the protections for intellectual properties is the fact that you are potentially being denied revenue and income.
Right.
Because you can't just say, well, like someone did something and stole this, but they didn't use it.
Right.
You've got to sort of show economic harm.
Right.
And the difficulty with showing economic harm is, how do you show economic harm without actually admitting that you're a business?
Right.
So this became very complicated and tricky, and I am not even going to get into
totally
all of that.
No, totally fine. But I think it's a great point. I think what you guys are bringing up is a great point. And like you said, Mike, they have attempted to get these things off the internet, but ultimately everyone prevails because the information is there. And had, you know, maybe Scientologists like me and you, Mike, really did know, right, what was there at the top of the confidential bridge, we would have given up a long time ago. But we're told those are lies. That's not true. We don't believe in Xenu. We don't believe in spirits and body thetans and clusters. And we're not talking to imaginary spirits. Like, we might have said, no, this is not what I thought I would be getting in Scientology. All right, anyway, let's go back to Andreas.
Right. And let me just also say that, as Andreas correctly pointed out, until him and Clambake, Scientology had been pretty successful in managing to get everything removed. Like, not just removed, but people's houses raided and their computers taken and that sort of stuff. And that's why he was saying, I had a bag packed. I was ready and expecting this to happen to me. So, Andreas, carry on. Let's go back to 1996 or whatever this was.
Yeah, that was 1996. And this was exactly what they did in America. I had great success with ruining people's lives. What they had successful in Netherlands and with Carrier, and in Sweden with Xenon. An interesting thing here is what happened to Xenon in Sweden, because he was a lawyer. In Norway, I don't know, Leah, if you know, but in Norway and in Scandinavia in general, we have a very open publication law. If something is public, it has to be protected. So, for example, in the moment Scientology sued Xenon in Sweden, they had to file all the paper that they were suing him from publishing into court. That made them public documents. So Xenon then went to the parliament, to the library in parliament, and filed the papers there. Then they had to put them into the parliament library, where everybody in Sweden, or everybody comes from anywhere, can go in and ask for documents. As long as we have the document reference, you can ask for a copy. Right. They will make a copy of the NOx or the OT levels or whatever. So there was Scientology shooting themselves in the foot.
Right.
Because suddenly anybody in the whole world can travel to Sweden, go into the parliament, and for free get a copy of the knots and all the secrets of Scientology.
Right.
Just because they sued Xenon.
Wow.
And there was also a library where you can borrow it, but they ended up with Scientologists being stationed there every day in the opening hour, sitting there, not being allowed to read it, but occupying it. So they ended up, the Swedish parliament ended up chaining the knots to the wall. So you couldn't sit. You had to stand.
And look,
Scientologists had to stand there all day to occupy the knots so nobody could come in. But then, of course, you can actually send a letter from anywhere in the world with a reference number to the parliament in Sweden, and they will ship you for free a copy of the secret documents. But then, of course, Scientologists sued the Swedish. That was a long story, but it was quite funny.
They were literally standing there guarding it so that no one would read it. So the Church of Scientology sent employees there just to stand there and hold it so no one could come in and see it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
That happened in courts in the United States too, Leah.
It did?
Yes. When the same materials were filed by Steve Fishman in the case, a case in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And you could therefore go to the court and ask the clerk of the court to provide you with a copy to read, there were Scientologists who were there every morning when it opened and standing in line and got the materials and kept them checked out the entire day till the end of the day and then handed them back so nobody could come and see them. Now,
wow.
you got to understand, this sounds insane, and it was insane, but this was Scientology, and particularly Religious Technology Center and David Miscavige, who were responsible for, quote, protecting these secret materials, blundering their way into a world that they did not understand in any way, shape, or form, and making horrendous, horrendous boo-boos all the way along the line. Like, the suing of Zenon Panousis, as Andrea said, then resulting in all of the documents being put into the court case, and then all of them being put into the parliamentary library of the Federal Parliament of Sweden, was like a catastrophe that was created entirely by Scientology.
Right.
And even Operation Clambake was, in fact, a catastrophe created by Scientology, because if all the efforts hadn't been taken priorly to try and stamp out Karen Spank and Dennis Ehrlich and et cetera, Andreas would never have gotten interested, and he would never have created Operation Clambake.
Right.
So this is like looking back in retrospect and laughing at the craziness of it, and, you know, time and history has told the story of how Scientology basically lost the war with the internet.
Right.
I'm sorry, Andreas. I just keep talking, but
So that was a scene for me. Then I was sitting there with my bag. I was doing a weekend stunt. I just read about Karen and Zenon. I was so sure they were coming to sue me and raid my house. And I had obtained the same lawyer as that guy I read about in the newspapers. I was pretty well prepared, and I had resources. I was a single man in my early 30s, got a good job, no kids. So this was, I had a plan. But then nothing happened. I don't know what went through Mike's and his friend's head that time, but I was the first one who released all the documents in full, public, with my name, my address, my telephone number, my email, my picture on the internet, took the full responsibility, and I wasn't sued. I've never been sued. And I didn't understand why. So what was this weekend stunt? Started snowballing into this cat and mouse game where I said, I don't believe I can convince anybody to change their mind in any subject. But I saw that I had a little thing I could do. I could actually create this, disarm them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the weapon Scientology had at that, from my perspective at that point, was they could harass and scare people, and they harassed and scared. If the person wasn't scared and harassed, they went to the internet service provider and scared them with thick lawyer letters, and they caved. Because this was in the infancy of internet. Nobody knew what the law was. It was before the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, for example. So there was no precedent in who's responsible when a person puts out secret stuff on their personal website. Is it the internet service provider? Is it the person? Is it the bandwidth the supplier? Is it the phone company? Nobody knew.
Right.
So Scientology went after and scared everybody wherever somebody bit on the hook. The page was down. So I said, okay, I can create multiple web pages and sites. And I can copy. I had sent out backup copies all around the world so that if I was taken down, there was a plan for things to be rolled back.
Yeah.
Everybody would have a copy. And as soon as they took down a page, I had another one in America. I had one in Sweden. I had one in Netherlands. So I just moved. I took the domain, Zenon.net. And if my page was down, I just redirected the domain to another copy I had somewhere else. So that what was this weekend stunt became this, suddenly people could link to documents and information, which they couldn't do before because the links were dead after 2 days or a week.
Right. So
suddenly people could link to things, and that meant that the media got hold of stuff. So that became this, even though people only remember me as the maybe Operation Clambake site, what maybe more important was the background, because that was just something that gave me a reputation of, because there was a lot of paranoia in the movement. Who's a Scientologist? Who's a troll? Who's out there just to be angry and make hubbub? But I was like week after week, month after month, and then eventually year after year, having the same information out, and nobody could take me down. Of course, that also somebody turned that into, he has to be OSA because nobody could keep this up.
Right. they thought you were OSA.
So that became my little goal. I was going to keep this up. I promised, and I was very cocky at the time. I was 30 plus, but I was called myself young. So I was quite cocky and said, "Okay, Mike, come and take me down. Now I have a important job. I work a lot. This is everything I do on my side. If you come and sue me, you'll get me 100%. I'll dedicate." Every time I get, because they were sending dead agent packs to my employer, I was, eventually I was an IT manager then in an American global company. Uh-huh. And I became the country CEO after a while. I was that for 15 years because they tried to use that against me. They sent, so my employer got in this company, probably heard about it, Iron Mountain, a head office in Boston. They get telefaxes from anonymous people. You can read. One of them was from somebody. I just had a lady in for interview for a position, and in the interview they tell about themselves and we tell about the company. So I talk about this guy and this name and the revenue and the plan and the strategy and stuff like that. You should tell in an interview for a senior position. And then somebody sent an anonymous fax to top management in Boston saying that I'm an employee, I want to be anonymous, I believe that Andreas is giving out sensitive information about the company to a man who works for the competitor. What I'm about to tell you would need to be treated carefully, because if Andreas finds this out, he will do something crazy with us. Even if he wants to look like a nice man, he's vindictive, and some of us have families. Andreas has strange contacts. And then it goes on about observing me with a strange man getting envelopes with something inside it. I got people on the door saying they were driven to me to come and deliver 5 grams of stuff. Mm. Dead birds on the port, things like that.
So wait, hang on. So Mike,
yes,
tell us. So this is a fair game operation. You guys find out that there's a guy who is putting up the truth about Scientology. You guys get together at OSA. You go, okay, let's find out everything about him. And now let's start following the fair game policy, which is, this is to a T, what the policy says, start selling lurid, what is it, Mike, in the policy? What does it say?
Lurid sex, blood, crimes. But really what it says is two things. One, find their buttons and Trump on them, and two, cost them their job.
Right.
And that example of that anonymous fax is exactly out of the Hubbard writing on how you set someone up. You know, it's the gosh porge, which I will put on the blog. I've put it many times before, but he gives an example of how you frame someone to get them fired.
Okay.
And that is what that anonymous email is. The person showing up to offer, you know, 5 grams of coke or whatever, that's just another. And then we'll document that and use it. And we've seen this in, like, the program for Tari. That program that we read out when we had Tari on the show is exactly that. What's called a 3-channel handling, because Hubbard says you have to have 3 different channels of attack that will result in a dismissed attacker, someone who has been silenced, who has been intimidated, who have lost their job, and who is no longer a problem for Scientology. And at the time, Andreas was a big problem. It wasn't just we heard about him. Andreas was like number one public enemy of Scientology for a long time.
Now, Mike, give us the and I think our listeners would be really interested in this, and I don't know if Andreas is interested in this, but I would be. Give us the inside real talk of what goes on at this point with Andreas. Like, what was really going on? Like, you know, from your, like, tell us what the shit that goes down. Like, you know, it sounds so sophomoric, right? But to our listeners, like, to hear Mike Rinder actually say, all right, so we get together with David Miscavige and this person, and they go, this guy in fucking Norway, he's got to be fucked. This is what we're going to do. Like, give us the real shit.
Yeah, well, and let me just back up a bit to help answering the question that Andreas had, which was, why didn't Scientology come after Andreas?
Sounds like it did. Well, sounds like it did, Mike.
No, legally, with a lawsuit and a raid.
Okay.
And I believe, and I wasn't in charge of that. This was being done by RTC. Warren McShane and the RTC people basically took care of all that part, the legal.
McShane and his team once traveled to Oslo and meet with my lawyer, but they had to go back without winning anything. And also McShane came to Stavanger once, where I live, and stepped up at the police office and was sitting in the hall in the police station in Stavanger, demanding to talk to the police chief in charge of my case. And he refused. I talked to him later and saw his file on me. And he said, I refuse to talk to those idiots. So they had to travel back to LA without even the police wanting to talk to me.
Wow. That says a lot about you guys. Secretly jealous, but go ahead, Mike. And who, by the way, can you explain who Moore McShane is, Mike? And RTC, I just want to remind everybody, RTC stands for Religious Technology Center. It's David Miscavige's personal organization. Go ahead.
Right. And Warren McShane is the president of RTC. That's just a title. He really has no power or authority other than he is the person who is the cannon fodder for RTC and Miscavige in legal cases. He is the one that gets sent to do depositions. He's the one that gets sent to go visit with the police. Miscavige is never going to go do that stuff. So Warren McShane is the designated guy.
And Warren McShane's still on the scene, right?
Yeah.
Because he's been doing a great job. Go ahead.
He's been lying away for many, 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 many years.
Okay,
go ahead. But the two reasons that I believe that you didn't get sued and raided, Andreas, one, the experience with Zenon Panousis and the Swedish parliament. I mean, that was a massive, massive catastrophe. And two, the fact that you registered your domain name as Xenu.net. And that, like, I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous to people in the outside world, but the word Xenu is, it cannot pass the lips of a Scientologist. You can't write it down. Like,
I got letters from Cobrin, Helena Cobrin, where she was complaining about URL addresses. And it says, take down this, say, www.xxxx.net. Then an address. And I just replied politely back, sorry, I don't own this xxxx site.
They couldn't even say Xenu because it would validate the fact of these confidential levels of Scientology, Mike. Really? They can't even say the word Xenu.
Yes. Okay. I'm dead serious, Leah.
It's so insane.
This happened all throughout these legal cases. Every time that Xenu got It was XXXX, and it's like it created such confusion and havoc, and you can't go in and demand that someone do something about a URL XXXX because that's like a porn site somewhere, I guess.
Right,
someone probably owns that somewhere,
right?
But it ain't Xenu.net.
Oh, so funny.
Those things are not the same thing. Any event, so you have, what are we going to do about Andreas Helder Lund and Operation Clambake? And literally what happens is you're sitting in a conference room or whatever. pull out all the files that there are about everything that may exist about Andreas, and then go, okay, what are his buttons? What is he vulnerable? What things is he seeking to protect?
And that was his job.
In an analysis. Right? Well, always it's his job, because if you can cost someone their job and they don't have any means of surviving or supporting themselves, they have to devote their time and effort to trying to live rather than doing what they were doing that was causing problems for Scientology.
Right.
And also that puts them in a vulnerable position to accepting some deal. Like, you want to get people into what's called a more amenable frame of mind so that they are willing to come to the table and take some sort of a payoff or a deal or whatever to shut up.
Right. And so, who's writing these actual faxes, Mike? Who's doing the actual work?
Oh, I have no idea.
Some random Sea Org member.
Yeah, remember Tori was talking about Bill Yowdy?
Uh-huh.
Bill Yowdy, who was a field auditor, who was an OSA volunteer, who opened up and went around and purchased, you know, fake IDs to send stuff out.
Yeah.
He might have written them. Okay. I don't know. Probably. Or people within OSA and then gave them to someone who took them to a fax machine in a library that was untraceable and sent the, you know, like.
I see. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
all that sort of crazy stuff that gets an operation.
Right.
And it's the same pattern that we saw, because it's based on the Hubbard policy, with Gabe Cazares.
With us.
And Paulette Cooper.
Yeah.
And now with us. It is this whatever in the minds of the people who are in OSA at that time is going to be effective at shutting this person up, that's what gets done. Plant drugs, call the police on them, complain about them for keeping too many cats in their house, go after the
Child Protective Services.
Yeah. Interview their ex-girlfriend, interview their people that they work with, try and find some disgruntled former employees.
Or a strange whatever. Family member. Right.
Anything, everything. No stone is left unturned for someone like Andreas.
Right.
Believe me, he was like a high priority for a long time.
Yeah.
A very long time. Because he never went away.
Right. And Andreas, you could not silence him. Good for you. And Andreas, what is the response on your end when your shareholders or your bosses are seeing these faxes? What is their response? Were they familiar with fair game and the tactics of Scientology?
No, but it started getting so much media coverage that it was I could send them an article. I mean, it was CNN. It was all the biggest newspapers in the world had something about this and the lawsuit. So people were starting to get a feeling of how litigious Scientology was, and they knew me. I mean, I've been working there for many years, so they trusted me and knew me very well. I was up in the management and knew everybody in the management from top in Boston to our manager in UK. It was difficult for them to believe anything of. I was a truly loyal employee, so. Sure. But it's worse. All those small things that they planned that worried me more. For example, they would call ex girlfriends or organizations. I mean, and plant these little seeds of concern.
Uh-huh.
For example, I work with kids. I work in a secular humanist organization where we got confirmation for kids. Confirmation courses, courses in ethics and morality and how to live your life and becoming an adult and stuff like that. And they started calling in people saying, oh, I had this, my daughter had this great teacher called Andreas. Can my son get him too? And they said, no, Andreas has stopped doing that now. He's doing marriages instead now. Okay, that's weird. Why did he stop? And then they start these leading questions about, is there something wrong? Is it, of course, my daughter said something. It's not like luring things into the sentences to hopefully find somebody who could tell it to the next one. Calling my ex-girlfriend and saying, were you fighting? What's happening? I was pretty sure that everything I knew about was okay. But of course, you had this worry in the background.
That somebody might believe it. Yeah.
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 It's a small, I mean, Norway is a small country, Stavanger is a small region, everybody knows everybody, and rumors can easily, and everybody makes enemies. There's probably people who don't like me, and who would use this opportunity to maybe spread some rumors.
Sure, and this is the purpose of Fair Game, right? It's just to plant the seed of doubt, that you might be doing something here, you might be doing something there. And that's the purpose of it, right, Mike? I mean, the purpose is to destroy him, but planting little seeds of doubt and rumor is just a little side effect that they hope catches on.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's everything and anything. You get all sorts of different things going, and hopefully one of them is going to work.
Hmm.
And so you do girlfriends, you do, you know, the Secular Humanist Society, you do the people that you work with, you go to your family members, you go to the guy, the place where you buy your coffee. I mean, anything and everything is something that is fair game, literally.
Right.
You just, there's no limits. And for someone who was creating as many headaches as Andreas was, I'm sure I don't even know all the stuff that was being done.
Right.
Like, I'm sure I was told, you've got to do something about it. And meanwhile, there's people in RTC that were doing stuff completely that I didn't even know.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you weren't privy to all of it. Yeah.
Right.
They were just sending all of you out.
But everybody was just mobilized, and maybe one of these things will work.
To silence him. Yeah.
Right.
Let's go through some of these things, Mike.
I actually wanted to ask Andreas, because we recently spoke to Tari. And it was really interesting because she had a lot to say about the influence that you had, Andreas, on her leaving Scientology. And I'd like to hear the story now from your side of that equation as to what happened.
First of all, Tori, as I told her, she should take credit for her own exit. By herself, it was fun to be there on the sidelines and helping in whatever I could. But for me, I mean, I was never hooked on the trolling on the internet. I wasn't on the internet to argue, just to get out some frustration or some anger issues or something. I was there to learn. I was there to try to make it work. I had this maybe naive, great belief in democracy and freedom of information and how the internet could become this huge change in the world, where there might be a new Einstein, a Marie Curie in Africa nobody knows about, but because they got an internet cafe, suddenly we will see that fantastic person, because they can come out and they can see information. So I was an idealist when it comes to free speech. So when I get into ARS, Alter Religion Scientology, the discussion news group that was before Facebook and Wikipedia and all that stuff, there was a lot of fighting. I mean, some of them were ex-Scientologists with a lot of anger. Some were people with obviously psychological problems. Some were trolls just looking for anywhere where they can make some noise. And some were from Scientology, some agents trying to disturb the exchange of information and open debate. And you saw these people coming in and out. And it was a nightmare, because I believe we can't get somebody out of a controlling cult by forcing them out or dragging them out. They have to find that exit themselves. Our job is to be on the outside and take good care of them and give them a place to come when they are ready for it themselves. And ARS was so opposite for that, because if you come out, you are frustrated, you are in a panic, you don't know what to believe in. Like Tori, have been grown up in all this. And then you come out in ARS, and you're just bombarded with accusations and crazy people screaming at you. So one of the things I wanted to do on ARS was trying to be live by example, trying to contact people a little bit on the back channel, trying to say, we're not all like this. Some have reason to be angry. Some have reason to be frustrated. Some have their lives ruined. So try to help her to formulate her post properly so that she didn't, because she was looking like a crazy person in the beginning. And she was in between trying to be an agent and trying to figure out what was happening in her life. So that was a fantastic experience for me too, because it's, again, then you have to do, then we were starting to get accused of being agents for Scientology, because we were becoming friends and everybody was convinced that Tori was an agent, and mm-hmm. was chaos in the period. But it was a good example for me to understand, because I just like Mark said in his interview, the latest interview, in the beginning, I must admit, I was maybe looking down, condescending to people who fell for cults. Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy standing on the outside and seeing the craziness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was only when I started, and I met so many thousands of Scientologists, ex-Scientologists over these years, mm-hmm. to start learning it, hey, many of these people are smarter than me. I really had to get my head around and change my perception about why and how and people are becoming victims of this type of traps. Right. And so that helped me a lot, because I had to sit down and admit, if the wrong place in my life at the main street in Oslo met the wrong person, or the right person or whatever, I could have fell for this or something similar. Sure. We've all been through difficulty. It's so easy to dismiss something from afterwards or from the outside. Mm-hmm. That helped me also build Operation Clambig into what it was, to give people that chance to see that it's not either or, black or white. It's, mm-hmm. Let's look at from both sides. The best argument I had with my side was, hey, when people criticize it because it's biased or something. No, hey, I have many links to Scientology.org on my site. Go to Scientology.org. There's not one link to my site there. Hmm. Somebody's interested in looking at both sides. Somebody's interested in trusting you to look at both sides. And who is that? So who do you trust? I'm not saying I'm right.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, you are right, but you know, you're absolutely right in that Scientology can do its own damage. No one's hiding what, except Scientology, what Scientology truly believes in. But if you go to their site, I mean, you will decide for yourself, this is not something that I should involve myself in or my family. And they do enough damage with just what's, you know, I don't even know how to say it, like omitting the truth about Scientology and even giving just tidbits of what they truly believe is enough, I think.
Yeah, but I think that Andreas makes a really interesting point here, which is he links to their stuff.
No, I get it.
In the interest of open discussion and, you know, yeah, look at everything, make up your own mind.
Sure.
And they never link to anything negative or critical ever in history.
I don't know that it's negative, Mike, more than it's the truth. They won't even admit when on direct questioning from people who are, you know, third parties to all this, don't have a dog in this fight. If you're doing an interview and they say, is it true that when you get to the confidential levels of Scientology, there's a Xenu story, and then you believe that your body's made up of body Satans, you know, body spirits, and they do the thinking for you, and that you claim that you could cure cancer. Because they say that on the confidential levels that a spirit can be acting as cancer or Alzheimer's, and Scientologists believe that they're curing themselves. If you ask Scientologists the truth, including management or just current Scientologists like Kirstie Alley, they'll say, that's insane. What are you listening to apostates for? And, you know, it's the fucking truth. That is what the confidential levels of Scientology consist of.
Yes, siree, ma'am.
It's not a lie. That's my point. Is what we're saying, right? Is this is Scientology. Scientology, you want to be acknowledged as other religions. Other religions say what they fucking believe in. whether people like it or not.
And if you want to help people out of those type of groups, you need to give them an opening, and mm-hmm. we need to give them an arena to come out without losing too much face or feel it's too hard. Because what we had back in the ARS days, we were pushing them back in too, so we had to take responsibility for that because of the way people
were treating them.
If I had met Mike Rinder, if he had played a fake name and tried to meet me on the net, I would be, for example, say, I don't care if that's Mike Rinder talking to me. Because the only way I can't argue against this guy. He knows a million more things than I do. I don't know his personal background, his experience, why he's in there. But the only thing I can be is myself, and I can be open, I can listen.
Yeah.
So that he, as a Scientologist back then, could think, okay, they aren't all crazy out there.
Right.
They are actually, they, some of them are listening. There is a world out there that is not just crazy. It's
right.
not only, yes. So being that, trying to educate people and being aware of you are not what you say, but you are what you do. And trying to be that example was maybe what I'm most proud of. I've said the wrong things too. I posted bad things I regretted too.
Mm-hmm.
We all have. But I'm really a big fan of Steve Hassan's book about helping people out. Because that I learned a lot from that. I use that book a lot. Because while Operation Clambake in the beginning was a collection of reliable links to all the information, that was my front, but that was more maybe grew into like a go-betweener, like a custodian of all the information I have, because people sent me of e-meters and books, and I have a room full of them. And also a connection between people and data and media and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And since I could have all the links up, I sort of get reliable, so people could contact me. I was really scared.
Yes, and Tori was one of them. You know, she like you said, she was scared, she was confused. I mean, we often talk to people who are, you know, thinking of leaving, and it's very hard for them to accept the fact that they're talking to, you know, labeled suppressive people by Scientology. I know when I first talked to Mike Rinder when I was still in, I was like, this man is an SP, a suppressive person to my group. You know, and it does take you a minute to kind of adjust your brain to this is not a bad person. Now, if Mike attacked me and said, Leah, you have a responsibility, you're a fucking celebrity, you got to get out there and do the right thing, get the fuck out. You know, Mike was very loving and said, it's a very hard time for you. You know, you have to make your own decisions. All I could do is give you the data, give you my experience as a Sea Org member most of my life. And you know, I'm here if you need to talk. And, you know, the person that was really pushing me towards back to Scientology was Marty Rathbun. And, you know, I was having a hard time with people calling it a cult, even though I was leaving, you know, and the anger and the ridicule, like, you know, Marty was doing videos ridiculing David. And I was really kind of taken aback by all of this at the, you know, when I first saw it. And I was like, where's the middle person? You know, and Mike was that person who, and same with Jason Begay, you know, was very loving towards me. And Paul Haggis, very loving. Amy Scobie, all these people were very loving and not like, Leah, you'll do it when you think is right. Remember, Mike, I used to call you all the time going, I should be doing something. I should be doing something. You know, I'm a fuck up. How am I not doing something? You're like, in time. It will be revealed to you what you're supposed to be doing. You know, this is before the aftermath, before Troublemaker. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And so you're right, Andreas. It's you know, what Steve Hassan promotes is, you know, allowing people to come to terms with, you know, what they believed in on their own, loving them through it. Scientology is a little bit different because you can't knock on doors. You can't go and see your daughters and your sons in Scientology. They'll slam doors in your face. Or in Mike's case, his children are in the Sea Org. They have no cell phones that Mike can contact them. They have no living spaces of their own. They live in Scientology owned and operated buildings. So, you know, because I know Steve gave you that advice right. once, right? Remember, he was like, well, just knock on her. She has no fucking door to knock on, Steve. Like, Scientology is a little bit different. Sea Org members are a little bit different. But, you know, even that is, you know, we know we're not supposed to approach them, you know, and out of respect for the policy of disconnection, I always say, listen, if it's your kid and you have access to them, go get them. If you have a family member who's in the Sea Org and you can't get a hold of them, file a police report. You know, you got to go hard with Sea Org members because there's no other way to get to them. Right, Mike?
Yes.
Exactly. But anyway, so yes. And so you also, I want to talk about Bob Minton and the Lisa McPherson Trust, because that was also a reason why you felt, you felt passionate about continuing to do the work that you're doing, as well as Jason Begay, right?
Yeah, it's, many times over these decades, you come to a point where you say, okay, now it's enough. I've done my duty.
Right. Believe me, we know.
But then, of course, Scientology does something stupid, and they put petrol on the fire again, and I'm back on the barricades. So, again and again. But yeah, it's Bob Minton was a special case. I never got to meet him, sadly, or Stacey. But of course, we had a lot of contact. I was really hoping that LMT could be that platform. The idea I got from Hassan about making an opening, an exit without anybody shouting at you or putting you down, but just mm-hmm. giving you a door yeah. you can go through yourself. Sadly, it was a little bit too what's the English word?
Confrontational.
Confrontational, yeah, thanks. And that fell apart. But it was actually one time I got, there was a guy calling me. He said, hey, this is Fatman. Okay, obviously from America, an American number. But yeah, I want to give some money to LMT. Can I send the money to you so it doesn't trace back to me? And I said, of course. And I thought somebody would send me $100 or something. A few weeks later, I got a check in my name, in my mailbox, not registered even, of $300,000 in my name, from an unknown sender. And there must be LMT money. What can I do? Because it could just as well be a trap from Scientology, uh-huh. putting me in a tax thing. So the first thing I did was call the police and the financial police of Norway, the tax office. I gave them the check to check it out. I don't want to touch yeah. this before I know that I can do something. Yeah. And they cleared it, the interview with the police and stuff. And then that Stacey Brooks started calling me, because that was money she was expecting for salary to Mark Bunker and others. So I had to start up a dollar account here in Norway and transfer all the money. It was crazy times. But and that turned out later in the lawsuit with Bob Minton, that when he settled that was money that he had probably out of tax haven somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was crazy.
Now, Mike, you also, can you put up the episode of Bob Minton and the history of Bob Minton and Stacey and the Lisa McPherson Trust, just to remind people,
course.
This was a woman who was basically, allegedly, I don't know if I, just to make sure this gets in the show, killed by the actions or lack of actions.
Negligence on
the Church of Scientology. And this is not a story that I want to go away, or for Lisa McPherson to be forgotten. And Bob was a great man, and he passed away. And we did an episode on this. And Mike, through OSA, had a lot to do with shutting down the Lisa McPherson Trust. So I don't know if it was necessarily because Bob was so confrontational, but because Mike was better at silencing people. And
well,
OSA, you know,
that,
I mean,
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean,
yeah,
one of the problems was, and I'm never going to speak ill of Bob, but one of the problems was his approach and some of the people that he got together with
mm-hmm.
were not the best choices to actually accomplish what he was trying to accomplish.
Understood.
Leave it like that.
Yeah, no, he did the best he can do under the circumstances, and being under extreme, you know, this is a man who was funding himself, a again, not a Scientologist, but like you, Andreas, was protecting, you know, our rights here in America. It was based on our Constitution, freedom of speech. And Scientology likes to use freedom of religion when it suits them and use silencing people from freedom of speech when it doesn't suit them. And so Bob Minton, like I said, really didn't have a dog in that fight. He funded the Lisa McPherson Trust and moved to Clearwater. He wasn't even from there to protect people's rights and the memory of Lisa McPherson. So what now, Andreas? So what's going on now with the site and the work to continue to expose Scientology? I mean, you're willing to talk to us after all these years. Obviously, you haven't gone away. Obviously, Scientology has not silenced you, and fair game tactics have not worked on you.
Well, slowly, as Wikipedia won, there was a big, just before Anonymous and Scientology came, it was probably the biggest boost we had was when Google tried to cancel my page.
Because,
we got the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DCMA, was it? In America, that protects the companies for copyrights being released on the internet by ignorant people like myself. And Scientology took that for everything it was worth and sued everybody. Or they filed the DCMA complaints against the internet providers, so they were then forced to take down. And then the one who's put the complaint data out then had to protect themselves and defend themselves. Get it back online. So when Scientology then contacted Google, there was again no policy for this. They didn't know what to do.
Right,
and of course, if you ask a lawyer, you know that they will say neither yes or no. They will say there's a possibility for a lawsuit here, risk, and then of course they take it down.
Right.
That long story short, that resulted in Google taking down my page. That created an insane amount of media all over the world, and that again forced Google. That's funny. First time I ever been. I might have read Playboy when I was young, but for the first time, I was actually quoted by Brin and the other co-founder of Google because they were confronted by this. They then started up a site where they when they take down my site. On Google, they added a little line on the bottom saying this page is disputed by a DCMA complaint. Go here to read the complaint. Then you can click on that link, and that will take you to a second page where the whole complaint from Scientology was, and that included all the links. So, you had to go two extra steps, but it created more hubbub. And it was interviewed all over the world in every weird language, and it's absolutely a circus for that period. And that again, not that alone, but this again then rolled into Scientology. Anonymous came onto the scene, and it was that created so much hubbub that Google found a good system. It stopped taking things down just blindly because of the confrontation, because of the bad media. Wikipedia was then also saved. I think Scientology had to give up on changing that. At that point, I started exiting. So I froze my webpage and then focused on being that going between the custodian of data and sort of connecting people and data instead and helping media outlets and researchers.
What was the next thing, Mike?
I mean, that's really it. That's sort of the end of the story. To some extent, Andreas is a historical hero figure in this world. He's still around. He's talking to us. He still helps people as necessary, but he is no longer the sort like his world, the world that he created with Operation Clambake has been taken over by Wikipedia and Google and you just got to look back to, you know, 20 years ago, there was very little, and he was the pioneer that started a repository of true information about Scientology that they didn't want the world to see being made accessible to anyone who wanted it. Now it's everywhere.
I definitely walk on shoulders on bigger people than me, but I'm just a cog in that wheel. But you are also historic here. I mean, this is who would have imagined that a small guy, I'm not so small physically, but a small guy up in Norway, in the forest in Norway, to sit there and talk to you two guys in 2021. This is crazy. It's a history. And I think it will be remembered that all the people involved in this, Scientology and us, have created a change. And I do believe that many people have been helped from it, indirectly and directly. I'm honored of having been allowed to meet so many amazing people. It's enriched my life with the critics, the ex-Scientologists, even Scientologists. That's given me a perspective on life that is insane. I have to say sorry to you two, because back in 2017, I was tried to hush me over because you lost somebody on a panel in one of the programs. And one of your assistants tried to get me over and get me visa and stuff over to America. And I had forgotten that I had promised to do a marriage that weekend to a couple of friends. I was so excited that I was asked to come over and fill an urgent space. I totally forgot. So I had to call back to your assistant and say, sorry, I have to cancel. I have to prioritize my friends. I promised them to marry them.
Of course. Yes.
So I felt so bad.
No, but,
Now I said sorry. I finally can say sorry after all these years.
There you go.
And if you ever, when you ever get Jason Begay on the line, give him a hug from me. Because that's a great guy. And I really miss him. So give him a great, warm Norwegian Viking bear hug from me.
Oh, we absolutely will. And Andreas, from us, thank you for all that you've done for Scientologists. You saved many. And for that, really, you should be proud. And we cannot thank you enough for the work that you've done for all of us. And for you made it possible for this information to be available to people to avoid pain for people now, generations to come. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
God continue to bless you and your family. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Thank you, my friend. I can finally call you that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Mike, in all fairness, you know, he did win this one.
Exactly. Thank God.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
And to you, sweetheart.
Safe.
Okay, Henry.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.